I have vivid memories of, as a kid, wrestling with my Uncle Jeb. Whenever we would go visit them in Baraboo, Wisconsin, a lot of times it would turn out me and my cousin Jake on the floor trying to get on top of what seemed to me at the time as a big, muscular, bearded woodsman of an uncle. He was a master, my Uncle Jeb, at wrestling and always falling on us, very carefully, of course, and trapping us under what seemed to be, to a six-year-old boy, a massive amount of weight, which he always would make a challenge in order to get out from underneath and on top of. Sometimes I remember my uncle's chocolate lab would get into the brawl as well, and my cousin and I would finally persevere getting on top of my uncle because he was so distracted by the dog licking his face and trying to burrow underneath him. And even though these wrestling matches were always playful, I remember vividly the feeling of my legs being pinned and not being able to move them. I remember the struggle of trying to push with all of my strength on my uncle and trying to wiggle my way out before he would grab me with his giant arms and pull me into another holding position. I was never scared. In fact, I loved it. But sometimes I remember my six-year-old self being so frustrated because I rarely got on top. Well, I've lived a little bit more since those days of wrestling with my Uncle Jeb. I have grown a little bit bigger, and my uncle has grown a little bit grayer. The notion of struggle has gotten a little bit more complex for me in my life than just getting on top of my uncle. But when I feel like I am wrestling with something mightily, many times I think back to that feeling of pushing my uncle with all of my strength. In both the parable in Luke, as well as in our Old Testament story of Jacob, we have vivid images and examples of wrestling and struggling with God. And I think this is really important, as sometimes it seems like we don't really know how or that it's even okay to wrestle with the divine. I know many times I have been asked genuinely about, you know, wow, how have you not really had any struggles now that you're a pastor? And I laugh to myself because I guess what it means to be a pastor is that all the struggles with the divine seem to have ceased. But I'll tell you right now, they haven't. Many times I still feel like I'm just about to get to the top, only to be pulled down and held tight once again. Struggle is real, especially struggle with God. So how do these texts then reveal this struggle with God? How do these texts give us permission to struggle with God? How do these texts give us hope in struggling with God? One thing I know that I've said over and over and over again, but one thing I want to make clear, so I'm going to say it again, is, you know, I think we tend to think of biblical characters as tall, white, handsome, chiseled, Zeus-like figures that are strong and true, but nothing could be farther from the truth. Do you remember the sermon series that we had on Jonah, right? Our fearless prophet who seemed to pout his way to the end of the book? Or how about Noah, who drank too much alcohol? Or Moses, who had a severe speech impediment? Or King David, who was an adulterer? or Elijah, who was suicidal, or Rahab, who was a prostitute, or Samson, who was a womanizer, and Jacob. Well, Jacob was a special case. In many Jewish traditions, Jacob is called the deceiver. He used deception twice to get what he wanted. In the first case, he deceived his brother into selling his birthright as the firstborn for just a bowl of stew. Do you remember that story from Sunday school? And then when Isaac, his father, was about to formally pass away, the blessing of the Abrahamic covenant to Esau, Jacob went along with his mother Rebekah's plan to deceive Isaac into passing it to him instead. And of course, Esau was outraged, as anybody would be. And so he starts to pursue Jacob. Jacob flees, and Esau is in pursuit. And that's where our story picks up today, in the book of Genesis. And in typical Jacob fashion, he knows that he's being pursued and that he's going to eventually meet his brother Esau. It's not clear, actually, if Esau, he might kill Jacob. Jacob might lose his life. And so, in typical fashion for this character, he sends his two wives, two maids, 11 children, and everything he owns ahead of him. So that is actually, you know, maybe they'll figure it out. Probably one of the most cowardly things I can think of to do, right? Send everything you own and even your own family to possibly get slaughtered to save your own skin. So Jacob isn't really what we would call a great model of a prophet. Yet here is this powerful story. Jacob wrestling with God. And in this wrestling, he is given a blessing of a new name. And here's where I think where we can start to get some important things here. Because now he has this new name. And we might think this as like really weird. It's kind of like, well, what's up with the new name? Like, that doesn't make any sense. But we need to remember that in ancient Near East culture, a new name is significant because a name gives you the tribe that you belong to. A name elevates your unique character traits. A name signifies if you have honor or shame. In fact, the word Jacob, actually means holder of the heel or on the heel of, which kind of hints at this person's shortcomings, I think. However, Israel literally means struggling with God, except it's in a positive context. So it's struggling and prevailing with God. As God says, you shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with humans and have prevailed. Jacob is given a new name. And in receiving a new name, he is given a new identity. Here's this incredibly flawed individual who by many accounts is a deceiver and a coward. But at least he has the courage to struggle with God. And in struggling with God, he has been given a new identity. You know, I've talked with a lot of families and family members following the death of a loved one. There are always an incredible array of emotions and feelings that everyone deals with in their own way, especially immediately after somebody passes. But in my young career as a pastor, I've begun to notice a trend. And that is the struggle of caring for a loved one who is on the verge of death is hard. And it is an incredible hard struggle. But More often than not, I talk with family members who immediately following this passing of their loved one, immediately after going through this struggle, they talk about how they have been changed, how they are and how they see life. If it has changed their priorities and some cases woken them up to some new priorities. Indeed, their identities have changed following this death, following struggle. Now, this argument can also be a little bit of what I'll call Pollyanna-esque, right? Well, if we just submit to struggling with God, you'll be changed. But if you notice, there's also something in this text that I think is very often passed over. And that is this. It says, when the man, God, saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he struck him on the hip socket and Jacob's hip was out of joint, and he wrestled with him. And then he said, let me go, for the day is breaking. But Jacob said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. So here we have God, the divine, who is asking to be let go. Isn't that kind of crazy? That seems very just weird to me. How can an all-powerful being be asked to be let go? But then Jacob demands this new identity. And here's the thing that I think is important for all of us to understand. Sometimes we need to not let God go. Sometimes in our struggle, we need to demand a new identity from God. Sometimes we need to be the ones to hold God a little bit to task. That is so important in the life of faith and the life of struggle. And you know, we're highlighting Bread for the World Sunday this morning. And I think that can be a great excuse for not letting God go on a global level. What does it mean to struggle with God and demand a new identity, not just for ourselves, but for our world? In some ways, I feel overwhelmed, like Jacob, not knowing if he is going to die when he meets his brother who is in pursuit. Sometimes I just kind of want to send everything I've got at all these problems and try to forget everything, right? 1 in 7 Americans, or 48 million people in this country, struggle from hunger. 12 million families have to deal with this issue every single day. And hunger isn't even the only problem that our world is dealing with right now. It's like a world we can't manage to get on top of, like Uncle Jeb. And yet we keep just getting pulled back. But here is where I find the good news. And it's not even in our Old Testament text today. It's actually a few chapters beyond. It's in Genesis chapter 33. When Jacob and Elijah finally meet. And Jacob says to Esau, please accept my gift that is brought to you, because God has dealt graciously with me and because I have everything I want. Then Esau replied, let us journey on our way and I will go alongside of you. Esau could have killed Jacob. Would have been his right to do so in ancient Near East culture, and yet he didn't. Instead, there is forgiveness, there is reconciliation, there is hope. When we become so embroiled and weighed down by our struggling with God and with problems that seem to overtake us, this is the promise that I think we have to hold on to into our new identity. This is the promise that we can't let go of. There will be answers. There will be hope. There will be peace. All of us have struggles. It's a matter of fact. And so as a church, let us then be the ones to support and to remind each other. That's what I think the mission of this church can be in many ways. To remind each other, even in our struggles, that in our new identity, worry, hope, despair that drive us and keep us down, a new identity of peace and hope is still possible. And for that, despite the struggle, thanks be to God. Amen.